And if I have a day when I get a bit angry with Morrison, I confess that that does happen, and I use some choice words that I really wouldn't repeat here. He wakes up the next morning, as excited as ever to see me. He doesn't hold a grudge. He doesn't become passive-aggressive. And nor does he worry about what's coming in the future. Morse has not got any concerns about Brexit. or climate change. But as humans are different, we have knowledge, we have consciousness. And what I want to suggest is that consciousness gives us the ability to anticipate the future and to remember the past. To anticipate the future and to remember the past. And that's what makes us vulnerable. That's what makes us naked. And here's why. Because if I can anticipate the future, I know that floods and earthquakes and fires and disease and wild animals can kill me. And that's not to mention evil, which we'll come on to in part two. It's a little teaser. And because we remember the past, we know that we've been hurt and embarrassed and face tragedy and trauma. And maybe we've been abused or bullied. So we're like these wounded creatures carrying the baggage of history into an uncertain and dangerous future. And that's a pretty tough way to think about it. But life is tough, life is hard. For some people, life is brutal. By the sweat of your brow, you will eat your food until you return to the ground. Since from it you were taken, and to dust you are, and to dust you will return. Again, that's in Genesis 3. To dust you are, and to dust you will return. And perhaps that's the ultimate vulnerability for Cain and Abel, is that they're going to die. And they know it. And maybe that's the ultimate vulnerability for each of us. And it brings us right back to our question, how will I live? What will I do with my one wild, precious life? Well, what do Cain and Abel do? They make a sacrifice. In their vulnerable state, now with the ability to anticipate the future, knowing that they're going to die, humanity learns something about how to live. And that is, if I sacrifice something today, I can make tomorrow a bit better. If I sacrifice something today, maybe I can make tomorrow a bit better. It's an incredibly simple idea, but I think it's an incredibly powerful idea. And I think it's the foundation of our civilization. And it's the foundation of this story of Cain and Abel and many other biblical stories. And I also think we know it. I think we understand it. But maybe it's so embedded in our culture that it's easy to forget. Just take a moment to reflect on the sacrifices which have been made for you to sit here this morning. You only need to pay the slightest bit of attention. Start to realize the enormity of them. The people who built this building, aside from all of the manual labor which went into it, all the learning that went into design and architect a building like this, the fact that we've got electricity, which was not only made, taking many sacrifices to discover, to put it in place through a national grid in this country for us to benefit from. The fact that you're sitting in a relatively cool seat, in an ambient temperature, the fact that you, when you travelled here this morning, you will have used some mode of transport and some form of transport infrastructure, that you probably felt safe when you came here this morning, because we've got a legal system in place that means it's very unlikely that any of us is going to get attacked in a public space. The fact that I can speak freely what I'm thinking in this place, and that you can listen to it. And you might be wondering whether that sacrifice is really worth it. There's a Greek proverb which says, a society grows great when old men plant trees whose shade they know they will never sit in. Voluntary sacrifice underpins the survival and flourishing of humankind, and it goes right back to this story. I just think it's incredible. Okay, verse 3. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord, and Abel also brought an offering of fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. So Cain brought something. Cain brought something. And we don't really know what it was. We don't really know what he sacrificed. And I think the fact that we don't know is an intentional part of this story. Because the point isn't being able to identify and measure exactly what the appropriate sacrifice is. The point is that we know from the story that Cain's heart wasn't in it. He was going through the motions. He didn't really think it mattered. He didn't really care. He was doing the bare minimum required to get by. We're choosing the path of least resistance, we can say. And I can identify with this very strongly. And for those who know me well, they will understand that my personality lends itself to the path of least resistance quite regularly. And I've been reflecting on that, I've been really challenged by this story and by this idea of sacrifice and, I guess, taking individual responsibility. And one of the reasons I've been reflecting on it quite hard is because life has changed quite dramatically in the last couple of years due to becoming a parent and having a child. And to give you a little bit of backstory of my life, I grew up in Northern Ireland. I was born in 1981, which makes me 37. It also puts me in the Generation Y camp. So, are there any other, if you were born in the 1980s or 90s, any show of hands? Okay. So you might understand what I'm talking about. And the Gen Y group were the children of the baby boomers. So our parents inherited a world post-war. They knew what it meant to have food rationed, to have scarce public services and resources, to live frugally, and to really take care of what you had materially. And the baby boomers also had the opportunity to rebuild the world. So they got a chance to, progress in their careers and take top jobs in science and business and health. And then by the time we came along, us Gen Y lot, we were in a much more peaceful environment where material wealth was not as hard to come by. And I remember my mum in our family, she would do everything for us kids. She would do all the cleaning, all the cooking, she would taxi us around. Basically, if we kept our room tidy and turned up for dinner on time and behaved reasonably well, that was pretty much enough to get it's to my embarrassment, my genuine embarrassment, that my mum was still buying my clothes when I was 18. And I remember when I came here as a student, I would go back to Northern Ireland in holidays, and she would write my dental appointment. And all I had to do was like show up. She would say, just turn up this time and try and brush your teeth for the weekend. And I never really questioned it at the time. I guess I went through the motions. I lived in the benefit of it. Thought, well, I'll take while the going's good, I'll accept it. And then I met Lucy. And Lucy had a very different childhood. Her parents separated when she was 12, so she lived in a single parent family. She had, things that she needed to do to make the household work, cook and clean and so on. And then her mum was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and she died when Lucy was 15. So then she really had to step up and take responsibility for her life. And so when we got married at the age of 24, she was like light years ahead of me in terms of taking responsibility for her life. Having developed domestic competence, maybe we could put it like that. And living with me was easy because I was like happy to go along with whatever. And so we had a kind of arrangement where she did a lot of things and I was happy for her to do a lot of things. And she was happy to do a lot of things and I was happy for her to do a lot of things. And so it kind of worked. It worked quite well in some ways. If any of you know what, any of you do know Lucy, you'll be aware that she's a. Oh, goodness. She's extremely capable and competent at getting stuff done. But then we have a child, and that changed things. That changed things quite dramatically. And the first year, maybe didn't change it as much because Lucy was off working on maternity leave. This year, I've really noticed the change. She's gone back to work. I'm working. We're both parenting. And we're both trying to run a house and get through the day. And I'm realizing all the sacrifices that I haven't made over all those years of life. And I've had the freedom to go out of the home and give my time to my career, to church, and to training as a counselor and different things. And in the home, I'm like a brand new, in a way, at some aspects of it. And it's really quite a sobering thing for me to be there. And I'm realizing how much it's on me now to take responsibility for my situation and to step up in several different ways. So you can decide if you're born in the 80s or 90s if that might apply to you as well. Abel, on the other hand, is doing something completely different. But what it says is Abel brought the fat portions from the firstborn. So it's like he brought the best of the best. And what this is telling us, what this is demonstrating, is that Abel is entering his life with wholehearted trust. It made me think, when I was reading this about marriage vows, it made me think about the commitment that people make together when they get married, because it's one of trust. You don't know what the future's going to hold. You don't know who that person's going to be in 10, 15, 20 years' time. You have to trust. And trust that the sacrifice is going to go both ways. That you're not going to be taken advantage of. And you know that it just wouldn't work if you tried to legislate for all the possible things that could go wrong in a marriage and, build in contingencies and plans. so unbelievably complicated to try and do that over a whole lifetime. And it would also completely take the heart away from what you're doing in the first place. So Abel is demonstrating this wholehearted trust, and Cain is going through the motions. Okay, so let's say we've established, at least in my head, we've established that voluntary sacrifice is this foundational principle for conscious, vulnerable humans to survive and flourish. And that Abel is showing us that the way to do that is something like sacrificing the best of the best. So what does that mean? Well, maybe it means something like this. The better my sacrifice today, the better I can make it tomorrow. And maybe not just for me, maybe for my family, maybe for my society, maybe for my nation. And maybe not just tomorrow, next week, and next month, and next year, or next century. So what can start with taking a few minutes to plant some seeds, instead of eating them to satisfy my hunger, so that I can reap a harvest next year. That can become taking a few decades to build a cathedral for which humans can encounter God in for millennia to come. And then we might ask ourselves, well, what's better than sacrificing my most valuable asset? In Abel's case, the fat of the firstborn. What is more valuable than my most valuable possession? And maybe it's something like this. My life. In Luke's gospel, it says, "For if you want to save your own life, you will lose it. But if you lose your life for my sake, you will save it." If you want to save your own life, you will lose it. That's what Cain is doing. He's holding back. He's keeping something for himself to try and ensure his own security. But if you lose your life for my sake, you will save it. And that's what Abel's doing, giving himself wholeheartedly. Verse 4, "The Lord looked with favour on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering he did not look with favour." So I'm not completely sure what "looked with favour" means. But I think we can assume something along the lines of things were going well for Abel. Maybe his specialism, keeping flocks, was thriving. Maybe his family are healthy and growing, something like that. And so Abel's like this representation for us of the ideal. It's like the coming together of human and divine. I'll give the best of the best of what I have, and God is looking on me with favour and coming to meet me. Now, what I don't think this story is saying is if we make the ultimate sacrifice, or if we do everything right, that we'll be rewarded in that sense. It's not transactional like that. And we shouldn't forget, in the end of this story, Abel is murdered. So things do not go well for him in the end. But what I think the story is saying is if we give our whole hearts to life, then God will meet us, will be with us, whatever our circumstances, however well or not things are going, and tragic things will happen. If we can orient ourselves towards truth, towards good, towards God, it will be a lot better for us and for others than if we don't. And again, we're going to explore more of that in part two, because we know that Cain does not choose that path. As I was preparing for this, So you need to just adjust yourself in your seat and find a little bit more comfort. Please do so. And try and take in these words and all of the images and pictures that they bring up. I went out to the hazel wood because a fire was in my head. I cut and peeled a hazel wand and had to bury to a thread. And when white moths were on the wing and moth-like stars were flickering out, I dropped the berry in a stream and caught a little silver trout. When I had laid it on the floor, I went to blow the fire flame, but something rustled on the floor and someone called me by my name. It had become a glimmering girl with apple blossom in her hair, who called me by my name and ran and faded through the brightening air. Though I am old from wandering through hollow lands and hilly lands, I will find out where she has gone and kiss her lips and take her hands and walk among long dappled grass and pluck till time and times are done. Silver apples of the moon, the golden apples of the sun. In Ireland, the image of a hazel wood is like, it's like a mystical place, a magical place, somewhere where a divine encounter could happen. And so at the beginning of this poem it says, I went out to the hazel wood because a fire was in my head. So that's talking about this sense of living in our heads, living in our anxiety and worry and concern and fear. And the writer of this poem is saying, there's a fire, it's burning, it's too much, I need to get out of this, I need to enter into some kind of deeper sense of reality. And so he goes out to hazelwood and cut and peels a hazel wand. So he takes a piece of hazel from a tree and then hooks a berry on a thread. And that berry is like a symbol of his life. A little berry, and I like the image of, like, I should have brought one with me, but the tiniest little berry, like your little heart, so vulnerable and fragile, but so much potential. And what he does is he hooks that little berry, he hooks his little small life onto a thread, and when white moths are on the wing, the moth-like stars are flickering out. So this beautiful scene in nature, he drops the berry in the stream. So he's giving his whole heart over and caught a little silver trout. There's something about when we give our whole selves to something, that magic can happen. Something can happen that is beyond a mere value for money transaction. And the poem goes on, I won't go through anymore, because I've taken up plenty of your time. So let me conclude. What am I saying this morning? Okay, well, here's what I'm not saying. Let's start there. What I'm not saying, and I really hope you haven't heard this, is do more, give more, try harder. You're not good enough. You're not doing enough. That's not the kind of sacrifice we're talking about. We all make sacrifices every day. You probably do some of them so automatically that you're not even aware of them. And maybe some of us make too many. There's a quote from a book I read by David White, which is, the antidote to exhaustion is not rest, it's wholeheartedness. The antidote to exhaustion is not rest, it's wholeheartedness. And I think many of us, when we think about sacrifice, we can think, oh, it's so exhausting, another thing to do, another thing to give. So what I am saying is something more like this. Find your place at the table. Step out of the shadow of your brother. Take responsibility for what you've been given. And as you orient yourself in that direction, give yourself wholeheartedly. And then the wonderful bit, God will meet you there. And when the floods and fires and disease and wild animals come at you, and when the wounds of the past haunt you, and the voices of doubt plague you, you won't be shaken.